Hello and welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. If you've been listening for a while, you know I'm a proud Tasmanian and I like to be able to tell the stories from down this way when I can. This one's been coming for a little while. We've had a bit of back and forth, and with a cancellation in my ultra busy weekend social calendar, I found my way to the Valley of Love to pay the lads from the Welcome Swallow Brewery a bit of a visit. 30 odd minutes north of Hobart is the Derwent Valley, and that's where we find ourselves today, in the historic town of New Norfolk. I'm sitting down and sharing a beer with the founders of this brewery and taproom, Nigel Graham and Eli Eichler, to find out more about them. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, lads.
Thanks, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here, mate.
Pleasure.
Legend. Eli, did I get your name right at the end there?
I think you're the first person ever to pronounce that right.
Well, oh, really? Okay, well, with a name like Lukianenko, you get used to pronouncing the Euro names and stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
Just want to give a bit of a shout out to the people that are whippersnippering and lawn mowing outside, so if you hear a bit of that, don't worry. I've got a full disclosure here because we are in the Derwent Valley and my wife grew up in these parts, so I'm probably a little bit biased to the old township, but I'll just put that out there, just putting out full disclosure. So you guys... Well, I know, Nigel, you're a local, but Eli, you are not, are you?
No, I just love to commute.
So Eli's from, what, the south of Hobart is?
Yeah, from the Huon Valley.
Down the Huon Valley, so he's got a 45-minute drive most days, I guess, to get up here, which for Tasmanians is fucking forever, because we don't like to travel much.
An hour and a half, I think.
Is it an hour and a half? Oh, yeah, shit. Yeah.
45 if the police don't know.
Yeah, okay. That's dedication to the cause, that's what that's called. Bloody hell. Yeah. So, anyway, so we're sitting in this venue, and I rocked into this place today, and it really did, I'm not going to say take my breath away, but it really did take me by surprise. So we're in an old warehouse of sorts, would you call it?
Yeah, it was the old workshop for the Royal Derwent Hospital.
Yeah, so okay.
Whenever there was a breakdown, everything came here and got fixed.
Yeah. So the Royal Derwent Hospital, for those people that don't know, was effectively a mental sort of hospital institution back in the day.
Hospital, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it and it, sprawling grounds all around us. This thing covered quite a few acres, yeah. I'm going to say.
It's huge.
And so there's like a sort of a little... You know, that's all done and dusted up here these days now, and now sort of developing to lots of little businesses around this area. So it's a little bit of a drive to get into here. So I'm sure one day on the entrance to the New Norfolk town line, you'll see Welcome Swallow Brewery with a massive big billboard.
We're
saying,
working on it.
get on the ring road and you're here. So so why out here? What attracted you out here?
I guess it's my roots.
Yep.
My great-grandfather or whatever settled the Lachlan Valley out here.
Yep.
It's just out here, so we've still got the family farm out there. So I was drawn back to the valley after travelling, grew up here,
yep.
And travelled quite extensively, and then, yeah, was drawn back to the Valley of Love.
Nice. Yeah, and I'm going to share some photos on the Insta of this place, because I couldn't believe when I walked in here just the amount of plants you've got in this joint. Like, this is an old workshop, but you wouldn't know it because the light, natural light in here is just amazing. And I've counted maybe, I don't know, 100 plants around me today. So
yeah.
Do you have a full-time gardener looking after this thing?
My partner, Jody, has the plant obsession.
Good on you, Jody.
She's decided to invest their superannuation in plants.
It
we'll
is
see awesome. If it pays off. Yeah.
And this thing's got everything from a wood heater to a beautiful old upright piano. It's like there's a lot of attention to detail going into the design of this joint.
Yeah.
Who did that?
Well, it was a team effort. I guess when we took on the lease in October 2019, we're 4 months into the lease, COVID hit, so that shut down all our plans to open the tap room. But it was a blessing in disguise because it allowed us to extensively renovate the place. Didn't quite have the funds to pay tradesmen or professionals, so we just did it ourselves.
The old Aussie, have a crack.
Yeah, right down to polishing the The concrete floors. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. I love that. I love that. As someone who's just recently done a bit of a reno of a house myself, having a crack at trying those things,
yeah.
Floorboards or whatever the case may be, it's good fun, actually.
It is. It is good fun.
I love it. Yeah.
It's crazy at times.
It's 2 weeks, you'll never get back.
Yeah.
But it was well worth it, yeah. I think, in the final.
So how did you guys meet?
We met ages ago, in 2003. Yeah. We've been friends for ages.
Yeah, we met.
Is there a nice romantic story about where you locked eyes across mangoes down in Hobart CBD or something?
There is, actually. We both worked on... You worked on Rosie's farm, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Working on Rosie's farm. Wasn't there a song about that?
I think so. Bob Dylan wrote it.
We met working for a fabulous lady down in Signet on a blueberry farm, actually, 20 so years ago. We both parted ways, I guess, a bit. Elias did a lot of travelling with his work. I travelled. And then we met back up probably 10 years ago.
Yep.
I found Elias down the rabbit hole of home brewing. We re-kicked off our friendship with the love of brewing.
Yeah, nice. So what are your professions originally before you started this thing?
Well, I've been an organic farmer on the family farm for the last 10 or so years.
Yep.
Well, before these 2 years. Yeah. And
yep.
Elias.
Yeah, I've been a river guide, actually. So
okay.
In tourism and...
Yeah, nice.
Work on the Franklin River in summer here in Tasmania.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Used to travel to the other side, to Norway, in our winters.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sorry to interrupt. Just a couple of things you can do if you want to help spread this craft beer gospel. First up, Apple Podcasts. If you've got it on your phone, find the Beer Healer Interviews, scroll all the way down to the bottom, rate, review, subscribe. That's the best thing you can do to help me out. Other than that, whatever podcast player you listen to this on, follow me or subscribe to me on that one. And then also, find me on Instagram and follow me there. Thanks for your help. And so you're both home brewers, were you?
Yeah,
rightio.
Indeed. Yeah, out of necessity to begin with, especially in...
Save money.
Yeah.
Every home brewer saves money.
Yeah. Saves heaps. and most brewers, you go down one rabbit hole, then the next rabbit hole, next rabbit hole. You learn so much and then realise there's so much more to learn. And, for myself, it became a bit of an obsession for a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who did you guys look to help you take that next step with your skills from a home brewer to a pro? Did you have a Yoda?
No.
okay, well, fuck podcast. That
podcast, really.
Yeah. You're on the tractor, right? Hours and hours of the brewing network.
I spent a lot of time on brush cutters, tractors, so I listened to every podcast the Brewing Network ever put out. Craft beer brewing, like Master Brewers Association. Just soaked my mind. Read everything I could find on the internet. Books, of course. Lots of books.
Did you own John Palmer How to Brew?
Yes, couple of editions. just trial and error, really, practicing. I started on a 3-vessel system I built out of
stolen kegs.
Closed kegs.
Bogues draft kegs.
And then got one of the very first Braumeisters to come into the country and then just started to refine recipes then.
Yeah, so. I've got a Braumeister too, but I reckon you're a bit better at using yours than I am with mine.
Yeah, they're brilliant kits.
They are a good kit. Yeah, absolutely.
It allows you to concentrate more on ingredients.
Yep.
Takes the process out of it a bit.
Yep.
Or the need to think about process.
So how did the chat go with you two guys when you... worked out that you were in beer love and wanted to spend the rest of your beer life together?
Nigel sold it to me. He said, we spend so much time in our respective sheds, we might as well combine our power and, you know.
But there was something you needed to do was, come here. Because it's like, we want to spend time together in sheds, but you've got to come to my town.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't quite that smooth. There was... couple of other projects I've been involved with. Well, one in particular where we actually started the partnership, and that didn't really go to plan. So then we stumbled onto this building. Well, I'd seen this building years before and always thought in the back of my mind that'd be a great brewery.
Yep.
And then once one door was closing, I saw the for rent sign on this building, and yeah, just once the bones of the building just, yeah, it's a great space.
Absolutely. So in setting up this place, what sort of venues did you take a look at? What inspired you?
Lots of US breweries, I guess. Okay.
You'd visited them in your travels?
No, wherever? Not really. Just having that obsession, like combing through magazines and the internet. I'm not sure how it really unfolded. It was just really getting in here and having a crack, and it unfolded to what it is today.
Yeah.
We had some good friends at the very start come up and help us paint out the original parts, and then a good mate came and did the mural.
The mural at the end, I'll share a picture of it, because it's a magnificent mural right at one end near the brew kit of a, obviously a swallow.
It actually got us through some really dark times for myself, in particular in here, you know, as many times when we could have walked away dealing with COVID and a lot of struggles. But I personally couldn't leave the building with that in here.
And yeah, nice. So what was it about COVID that nearly, was it just a pure timing thing? Because everybody's obviously been affected by it, had to pivot and all that sort of thing, but the fact that you were so new into this thing that when that hit, was that?
Well, the business plan was to open a tap room.
Yeah.
Because we've got quite a small system that we operate. So the plan was to sell most of it across our own bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then when COVID hit, there was a lot of timelines thrown at us. It'd be 12 months to open. So we did the bright idea of pivoting into package.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought a small European manual canner and, had some fun doing that, didn't we, Elias?
Are you still using that manual canner, or have you switched to East Coast or one of those guys? Or Shambles guys?
With Shambles, we take our beer there and then spend the day with them, which is always fun, you know, dealing with things such as forklifts and all those sort of novel things. Oh, wow, you know.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I think what Nigel was saying, the COVID thing, it was a lot of uncertainty and fear all of a sudden, and then we had a very little bit of money left, and we thought, shit, what are we going to do if we can't operate as a tap room?
Mm-hmm.
And we went into this thing. It was actually a year ago yesterday that we released our first batch of beer that we canned ourselves. They were all black cans.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Good.
They were all black cans with a label on the back that was actually a you know, posted return sticker, you know, you can get from Vistaprint.
Yeah.
And we canned them ourselves on you know, the machine of torture, which took about 16 hours for one batch. And
wow.
If anyone out there wants to buy a canning machine, we've got just the item.
I love it. So can we talk in terms of, like, you know, you said you were almost out of money. Like, I don't think people that listen to these things sometimes realise, like, how deep in you have to go to get something, even though this is quite small in the overall scheme of things, like, how deep you have to go into your personal and family savings to actually make one of these things happen.
Yeah, it is. It's very cost prohibitive, really, to capital intensive to get into. Just a hurdle that we had to overcome.
Yeah, because I know a few who are in the game. I actually get angry when people bag out breweries. Like, you see drain pours on social media, that sort of behaviour. Right. I don't like that, because of what I'm looking at here is two blokes who have put themselves to the hilt financially to chase a dream, and all it takes is one dickhead to drain pour a beer, and your reputation is tarnished because of the reach of social media these days. I don't know how I get that point across, because people often say to me, oh, you're always too positive. I'm never going to buy a beer that you recommend because you never say anything negative. I was like, no. I don't like every beer that I drink.
Yeah.
But I also have respect for the people that are behind these things. So if I have a problem with a beer, like we were talking off the mic before, I'll talk to that brewer and say, oh, and I'm not the greatest palate in the world.
Yeah.
Oh, well, something wrong with this beer. Can you explain it to me? I'm not going to post about it on social media because I don't want to add to that negativity, because I think... And I'm not being a dickhead that I've got a good reach or anything, but it doesn't take much for some negativity to come through onto a label's name.
That's right, yeah. And the problem I have with drain pours is that, you know, brewing unpasteurised, unfiltered beer, like the moment it leaves the brewery, it's out of our control. So yeah. The beer that leaves the brewery, if it's been, you know, kept in 30 degree heat or put on a shelf, a warm shelf, it doesn't hold up, especially hazy style of beers. Mm. So the beer that you're drain pouring, it's not the beer essentially that left the brewery.
And
it, you know, you could probably blame some other people in the chain for that.
You could, yeah.
I think you're right though, Chris. It's probably just because folks don't, it's hard to really know what goes behind all these steps. And I'd probably say for every beer that's poured down the drain on social media, there's probably a brewer out there that's brewed, poured their own beer 10 times down the drain, you know, because there's no one that's a harsher critic than the folks that are actually brewing it. So,
and you do get bad cans. Like, it's you know, it doesn't matter how expensive the machinery is that you're using. There is the odd you know, bit of oxygen ingress that gets in there, and it doesn't take much to spoil a live product, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. Tell us about the kit. You mentioned it earlier that it's sort of small. But what are the specs around it?
So it's a 400 litre Tiantai system, got made back in 2016. So it was the first crack at getting a brewery off the ground back then. Had a few things added in, had a hot liquor tank added in, and they forgot to put in an extra pump and stuff. So it's an interesting, we're making some modifications now so that we can isolate the mash tun for recirc and just pimp it up a little bit. But
I like that, pimp it up.
Yeah, it's a long brew day. So we double batch into 1,000 litre fermenters, which are 800 net uni tanks. By the time we dry hop, we're probably, our hoppy beers, we're pulling probably 12 kegs out of an IPA. Yeah, it's quite a bit of loss through the process.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, to me, doing my Rain Man maths in my head, you know, I think everybody just imagines as soon as you own a brewery, you've got a license to write money, but
that's right.
You're thinking about the ingredients that are going to, especially like with your big dry hops and things like that there's not quite as much fat in this thing as people think.
No, there's not. And I guess the relaxation of excise is a godsend for us.
Yep.
You know, that really means that we can edge forward slowly. But you know, you've got rent, power, gas, hops, grain, yeast.
And I think
it just
probably
goes
the,
on and on.
Yeah, that's probably the beauty of the setup that you got here, that you're going to pump as much as you can through your own bar, so you're not...
That's right.
You know, you're removing a bit of that packaging cost and labels and things like that to try and do that.
Yeah.
So what's your split, do you think, in terms of bar or the tap room compared to... cans, are you?
Well, that's the funny thing.
You know, the figures are liars.
We don't really. We're still sort of shooting from the hip a little bit. And
that'll do.
I mean, one of the funny thing that's happened out of this whole, you know, last year and a bit, 2 years, is that we did go in the packaging realm, and managed to get our beer out there amongst places and at least locally, and have gotten a small following, which is really fun.
Cool.
And you know, the labels and the cans look really cool, and so we'd like to keep doing that, but definitely at our size it's a real juggle, is, you know, to make sure that we've got enough beer for our tap room here, which is the only place where we make any money, but still be able to, you know, get it into Hobart and get it into people's hands, and so they can have a beer at home and a bit of a laugh at the labels.
Yeah. We'll jump on the labels shortly, but I just want to know how people up here taken to drinking fuller flavoured beers, because this is Cassie D country, basically.
Yeah. They're very enthusiastic.
They are?
Yeah,
oh,
they
great.
Love it. They come into our space, and it's hard to get some of them out of here, actually. we've had nothing but great reports, great feedback.
It's been the most rewarding thing, Chris. Yeah, we invite you back. You should come one day when the place is bustling, because it's such a mixed crowd of people, and you wouldn't expect them to be craft beer enthusiasts, but they are. They love it.
Yeah. You know? What's your gateway beer for those Cassie D enthusiasts?
At the moment, it's probably the Valley Fog. We stupidly, is that the right word? Brew a different beer each brew we brew. So carrying on from our homebrew roots, which is pretty much how I brewed with my homebrewing career, forever exploring ingredients and process. So we do bring a couple of beers that are quite popular back around and do small tweaks. But at the moment, every brew is a different beer.
Yep.
So we try and have a couple on there that are very accessible.
Approachable,
So we've got an oat pale ale there with what we call the Valley Fog, named after the foggy valley that we do live in. There's some nice Talus hops there, and that's been going gangbusters.
Yeah, cool.
Also, our darker beers, stouts are really popular. Yep. People that, people would have it. There's a bit of a stigma out there, I think, with a lot of how do we call it?
They tend to associate themselves with winter.
They associate hops with bitterness, and so it's like, I don't like hops. And malt seems to be a good gateway.
One of the most popular beers, actually, the most popular beer is Nigel's Sour.
I reckon they're a great gateway beer, especially, I don't want to sound sexist, but for the females that have been drinking wine, it's such a great way to bring them into this world that we all, I've seen it with my wife, I love it.
Yeah.
What sort of sours are you brewing?
It's pretty broad, it's pretty split ratio, really, with big burly blokes.
around with raspberry sours, these nice pink beers.
One we have on tap at the moment is Angel Tears, so it's... it's a kettle sour. It's a clean sour, just a bit of tartness there, and we re-ferment it onto my organic raspberries that I grow out in the other valley.
I was going to ask you about raspberries because they're famous in Tassie down here to have those, and obviously the Westaway raspberries are always associated with the word down here, but you've got your own, so you one up that.
They're full of weeds at the moment because we haven't had time to get back and tend to them, but hopefully one day we can still have a freezer full of fruit from last year.
That's awesome. So, do you grow anything else on the farm that's going to come into these beers?
Hops. We did have a couple
of your own hops?
Hop plants there.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, but once again, they're all just overgrown and neglected at the moment because... it turns out the breweries and farms are the two most labour-intensive professions out there.
Are you saying that Welcome Swallow might one day become a farmhouse brewery to rival, say, Van Diemen or someone like that?
But Elias won't let me. To go the farmhouse route, that is, we need big. Another...
to go all funky.
We probably need another building to start doing
that. To keep the funk in.
But, to incorporate... some native bacterias and yeast from the farm would be great.
That'd be awesome.
Fruit and,
So what beers excite the two of you?
We love hops.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anything with hops and farmhouse. I like my sours and farmhouse style. Definitely hops. And stouts.
And everything.
And barrel-aged stouts.
You've managed to get some barrels to do some stouts in, have you? Have you?
Two barrels so far.
Fingers crossed, there's some more on the way.
Where did the first ones come from? Which distillery?
That was the mate, Johnny, who he's worked for a few distilleries about Taz, but he has his own little thing on the side where he makes his own whiskey. So that was a 50-litre barrel and a 25-litre barrel. So that was
nice. That's not Johnny from the Whiskey Club, is it?
Probably. Can I say that on air?
I haven't met him. I've heard it. Just heard his name. I think that's good. Yeah,
he's a good mate. He's awesome. Fellow Johnny. Yeah.
Unreal.
We may well have just sourced some 200-litre ones, but
would be heaps better for us.
That'll be
cool.
Bourbon barrels.
Are you planning on settling on a core range at any time, or not really?
Well, back to what Nigel was saying. Like, there's a little bit of fun in the. New beer every time. There is a theme throughout our beers, so we'd like to think that there is like a Welcome Swallow taste that's starting to come through, and Nigel's flair on all the beers. But at the moment, with our current setup, it's you know, repeatability is quite difficult. The control on our system is, we like to joke that we've actually gone backwards in control from our homebrew days and gone to a more primitive setup. Larger, but more primitive.
Yeah, it's probably got less control on temperatures and whatnot. I guess if we come across a larger system, then we might bring in a bit of a core range.
Yep.
But at the moment, the only advantage of our size at the moment is that we can keep mixing it up and keep it exciting. And so when you come into the tap room, you know, after a couple of weeks, there's a couple of newbies to try.
Yep.
And you know, it's the great journey of craft beer is to keep trying new things, especially with the promiscuous craft beer drinker that we are today.
People they're hard
like
to please.
And people like to keep trying different things.
Yeah.
As you'd know, when you go to the fridge in your favourite bottle shop, you're looking for the, what haven't I tried before? And maybe there is a brewery that you like, and then if you see something new from that brewery, you're going to, I'll give that a go.
Yeah. Big part of that is obviously labels. Beautiful segue from me there to talk about your cartoon beer labels. Tell me about that, because when I first saw them, all I had in my head was this beautiful mural up on the wall. And I looked at the can labels like, what are they doing there? Like, I couldn't quite understand the link between the two. I now know that there's obviously someone who's in the family who's the artist, but I want you to explain to me the reasoning for choosing those labels and doing it that way.
Well, originally the idea was to have the swallow that was going to be our brand on the can, and we kind of looked at a few designs on the can. I'd been watching my nephew's art over the last few years. He was still in grade 8 at the time, so he was 14, drawing some amazing creations. I always thought in the back of my mind they'd be great on a beer can. So once we got through our black plain labels, I don't know how it came about. I think I showed Elias some of his artwork, and we got excited together, and the rest is history.
Yep.
We brought Paris, my nephew, on board, who is now he's just finishing grade 9 actually. So.
Yep.
He's our in-house artist.
Nice.
We come up with a funny story, throw the story to him and an idea, and his little artistic brain goes to work, or his bigger artistic brain, I should say, and comes back with, the most funny little creations.
How many labels has he done so far?
Jeez.
12, 14, 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a few, and there's more to come.
Yeah.
But like Nigel said, that they're a real motivator. You just, you know, you might have a beer or two, and then we come up with a really quite out there stupid idea. Sometimes we write them down, and sometimes we forget them. And you're like, that lost idea. But the ones that we do manage to get to Paris, and then, you know, a few weeks later, you get his version of it, and you just piss yourself laughing.
It's an original artwork. It's really great. Yeah.
So that'll continue on.
It's great to bring other people along on the journey. You know, it's his dream to one day go to art school and follow his dream on the outside. So it's really good to be able to help him realise his dreams as we realise ours.
It's pretty pretty cost effective. You pay him $1,000 a label, it's good.
Well, that is
nice, guys.
Yeah. We've just brought it back down to $1,000
when he arrives in his Maserati.
That's right. Now he does okay out of it. We're just building him a tab when he turns 18.
Nice. I like it. Yeah. Music seems to be a big part of this venue when I walked in today, and we had some pretty cool old soul tracks playing on the... Oh, no, I can't... What?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's all right. Cut.
Off the record, we're not allowed to have any music.
That's all right.
Including the boombox. No, it's all bullshit.
No, yeah. We'll do it because we're pushing ahead to, yeah.
We're only joking. That's an internal joke. Right, absolutely.
Okay. All right, I'll ask a question then.
I'm a silly town planner.
Music's a huge part.
Let me ask you again. Yeah, yeah.
I do it. We're just
I don't think council will
listen. Yeah, that's right.
No, I don't reckon I do too.
Go again.
So music seems to be a big part of the venue. You know, I walk in here today and there's some really cool old soul classics playing on the stereo, and there's obviously the big upright piano in there. I know you guys have done some amateur nights, open mic nights and things like that, yeah. Haven't you? So
I just started an open mic last Sunday, so we'd like to run an open mic once a month for the.
Yep.
It's a great opportunity for the community to get together and
that'll bring in a whole different sort of consumer, wouldn't it? Because like the families of the person who's singing up there want to support that, so
it does, yeah,
that's
yeah.
Nice. I like
yeah.
That.
Yeah, it's good to involve the community in that process as well.
Are you guys musos at all, or
only in the shower?
Yeah,
or in the brew house for Nigel. Yeah. I've got these Bluetooth headphones when we work together because sometimes
I don't mind it. I've had some comments from the yoga studio next door about my dulcet tones. I don't mind cracking out
Nigel's still waiting for his invite to Journey, I think.
Journey, oh, I love it, yeah. Don't stop.
Really? That's funny you say that. That's actually the theme song of this brewery. Don't Stop Believing. That's
actually a really cool theme, I think, because I think for many, sometimes it can get a bit, especially, you know, we talked about having COVID, trying to get through those tough times. Don't Stop Believing seems like a pretty appropriate tune, I reckon.
That's right, we've banged that out many a times on the stereo.
Where's your musical sort of interests lie? Is it like, you know, big hair rock from the 80s or something like that?
It's pretty broad, actually. It's right across from big hair rock 80s to... Elias likes a bit of death metal.
Oh, right.
I don't mind a bit of psy trance as well, so it's
Nigel
right
digs a bit of Cliff Richards at times.
Cliff.
Hey, come on. There's nothing wrong with 80s.
I don't want a bit of 80s.
Music.
It's pretty eclectic, hey? We
mix it
all over the shop.
Yeah,
we mix it up.
Yeah, we definitely.
But music in this venue, it's great, hey? Like, we've had folks in that brew house area.
Yep.
Backdrop of lights and a few plants, and we're lucky enough to have some friends that are probably a little bit beyond the open mic thing.
Yep.
They're pros, and we've had some really great nights.
Yeah.
I did see a video of something random on your website of three dudes, like it looked like they were in a cupboard near the water or something playing.
Yeah, so
I don't know who that was.
So they're friends of ours.
Yeah,
Jethro Pickett. He lives down on the water in the Huon Valley, and very talented chap. And he got together some other sort of hard hitters of soul that have other jobs, as most musicians do, and they came in one practice session, and then they came in and
vibe. What are the acoustics like in here?
When those guys play, it's okay. It's a bit cavernous. But as the plants grow, we're hoping that it'll take a little bit of that. Kind of whole feeling out of it.
I was down at the Moona Hotel and Cellars this weekend for their, they've pretty much just opened up.
Yep.
The Fox Friday guys have done that, and I said to the guys, I love the venue, but like as an old bloke who's hearing is probably not what it was quite echoey. Maybe they need to take a leaf out of your book and just put a fuckload of plants everywhere.
Literally a leaf. When the building was empty, it was like that. Noise would just reverberate around. But the plants have done a really good job of soaking.
It's good, isn't it?
It's been a pleasant surprise, hasn't it? The acoustics are a lot better than we thought.
Yeah.
Because it does sort of take out that bounce. And and Jody tells us, she's far from finished. Until you need a machete to get in here, it's... there's going to be more plants coming.
It's pretty
Everyone
awesome.
Gets a machete as they come.
Nice. So with the whole thing of you guys going into Cairns and stuff, I've also seen you've got your online shop up and running. I'm just really curious to know, have you had any interstate interest from the shop?
Yeah.
You have, yeah?
Um, Yeah, had a fair bit earlier on. We've currently sold out of cans, so we've had to take it off the shop for now. But yeah, we've sent beer to Adelaide, Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria. Yeah, Launceston.
Launceston's a long way away. And how are you guys finding the whole Tassie brew scene? Have you guys sort of early on, did you sort of seek out some of the more, you know, the older OGs of the industry for help, or is it sort of
not really? Kind of ran our own race there. We were more involved with the Hobart Homebrew Club.
Been
involved with that for many, many years, and used to love entering the state comps and national comps with that, and the local. There's a couple of great Battle of the Breweries, a couple of great local competitions, and the community around the
it is a cool community, actually, isn't it?
It was probably always, I'm not sure, a little nervous maybe to ask for help from from peers. Yeah, it's probably, you know, probably unjustified as coming into the industry. Yeah, that they're all great people in the industry, which has been very accommodating for us.
Yeah,
it's been great. So we've had lots of help since we've opened. Yeah, but leading up to it, we kept it pretty quiet, I guess.
Any plans to do a, you know, Tassie collaboration with any of them at some stage?
Yeah, well, we had hoped to have one with Hobart Brewers for their Hoptoberfest, but
that got killed, didn't it, because of COVID?
It did, and we just don't have the tank space at the moment. We're battling to keep up with the tap room and then try and get some to can that we just didn't have the tank space, unfortunately, to do it. But hopefully one day we can, get back on board and collaborate.
But we have found that the scene, the commercial scene in Tasmania, has been really welcoming, super helpful, especially Cornell and the guys at Chambles have helped us a heap, and it's really fun to work together with those guys.
Yeah, they're awesome.
I mean, I think Nigel's background as a farmer is he just likes to solve problems himself. He'll get in there and fix a machine and you know, become an electrician or a plumber or whatever needs doing. He'll get on his knees and get in there. More and more we've realised that we can actually ask for help from the industry, and they're always really good.
So the most important question I've probably got for the day is who's the food truck tonight?
Brew in Italy today.
Yeah,
so we had fried and loaded here last night. It was their first birthday as well as our birthday, so we had a bit of a party here last night to celebrate that.
Yeah, cool.
And then Brew in Italy bringing pasta along today.
Yeah, that works out well for you, because I don't know where you would put a kitchen in this joint.
No, I don't think we're that silly either to go, you know, the amount of hoops we had to jump through to get the brewery through, regulations, food kitchen, maybe one day. An external...
A permanent van maybe or something like
that.
That would be the
go for
us. Do you have food vans jumping over themselves to get involved up here?
Well, Elias has tried to track down.
It was a little bit trickier to begin with. We're an unknown, but the more people have come up and had a great time, they want to come back. So, you know, so but it's a long way away.
And
if you don't know it's going to work, it's a bit of a gamble.
And it is a bit of a gamble every day in the tap room. It's a bit of a gamble for us because we don't know what's going to happen.
So, What's a big night look like up here in terms of numbers that come through the door?
100, 150.
That's pretty good.
We get a few through,
that's pretty good.
The local support, it's really blown us away, hey? But
there's
some folks that are really working on an alcohol habit, I think.
I think they've already got one. Just the amount of times people say they've been hanging out for something like this in the valley, and they love it. So
that's awesome.
Really good.
Where's the future going to take you guys? Is this thing going to go gangbusters? Are you going to double your kit? Like, you're almost ready to have a new kit, obviously, because everybody does when they start a brewery. They want to replace the kit after 12 months.
So. Well, I didn't realise that it was going to happen that well. I didn't think it was going to happen that quickly, that we'd max out. yeah, watch this space, I guess. We're throwing around a couple of ideas.
Yeah. So, do you want to go into state, or are you happy to stay Tassie for now?
We'd love to, but in the immediate future, we'd like to get up to Launceston and into the outer suburbs of Hobart, perhaps.
Just want to be careful not them, you know, grow a little bit, but not too much, because as we both talk about, the bigger it becomes, the bigger our problems become, I guess. So there might be a nice little middle ground there where we can supply, actually be able to sell a few more kegs and cans off-site, as well as sell over our own bar. Yep.
The problem is going to be, how are you going to convert the cool little cartoon pictures into tap deckles?
Mm.
Yes, I didn't think of that.
I'm the attention to detail guy.
we'll cross that bridge when we have to.
I did notice the other night at the Moonacells that the Fox Friday tap is actually just their coaster from the other venue. Yeah. So maybe you can just do that.
What we've put out there to the accounts that do support us, it's just our logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a bit of a wood, piece of wood.
Chalkboard sort of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. We did that with Batch actually for a long time. It was just easy.
Yeah.
Because Batch was so rotating so many different things.
That's right. And that's where we're at as well. So,
I like it. Oh, well, this has been great chat. I'm glad I finally made it up here to see you guys. We did plan to do this over the one weekend that COVID locked everything down.
It was hard times, wasn't it?
It was tough. But, exciting stuff for the Valley and another great Hobart brewer producing awesome beers. We didn't really get onto what we were drinking today, which was the Pale Dale, New Zealand hops. Enjoyed that while we're having a chat here today. You know, obviously some great rotating beers flowing through these taps. So if you are planning coming to Hobart at some stage soon, because the borders have opened up, you better get down here for Christmas and get up to the Valley of Love and smash a few Pale Dales.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Brilliant. Thanks for joining us, fellas.
Thanks, Chris.
Cheers. Thanks, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.